And exactly 100 years ago today, April 18th, 1906, at 5:15 in the morning, a major earthquake destroys San Francisco, California. Combined with the ensuing fire, 500 to 700 people have died, and another 250,000 left homeless. Damages totaled over $500 million. The quake was estimated between 7.9 and 8.3 on the yet-to-be-devised Richter scale. Quote, I asked a man standing next to me what happened before he could answer. 1,000 bricks fell on him. He was killed. A woman threw her arms around my neck. I pushed her away and fled. All the buildings around me were rocking in flames, shooting as I ran. On all sides were crying, praying, calling for help. I thought the end of the world had come.
There is an earthquake coming to town. Railroads and highways and bridges will split. Sinking and killing people. Snakes and birds and cats will warn us. 1 week in advance by acting stupid and speaking our language. But no one can listen. Buildings will crumble down. Bricks and nails hold up nothing. The walls and windows of our apartment will come crashing down. And the glaciers will melt and turn into mud
and flow into town. But we'll be okay. We live on a hill.
The quaking of the earth and the eruption of the volcano will cause the sea to rise. 50-foot tidal waves will flood the town and countryside.
Islands will be created where farmland once existed.
A century ago, San Francisco was California's biggest city, and at 5 a.m. on Wednesday, April 18th, the city was starting to wake up. Then at 5:12, the earth shifted. History professor and former California State Librarian Kevin Starr says there were two jolts, the second one lasting 40 seconds.
You don't have panic, you don't have noise, you have a period of silent shock and awe. What had happened? And people came out on the street, looked to each other, looked around, and said, what has happened? What has happened?
What had happened was that an earthquake, today estimated at magnitude 7.9, violently shook the city. Gas lines broke, 60 fires broke out, and the water system failed.
As devastating as the earthquake was, it did not completely destroy the city. What did the damage were those firestorms, and compounded by the firestorms was the technique of deliberately dynamiting buildings. In many instances, the buildings that were dynamited actually fed the fire.
Today, there are fewer than a dozen survivors of the disaster. One of them, Herb Hamrell, 103 years old and still working part-time at a local supermarket, was 3 years old when the earthquake hit.
I remember my mother carrying me down the stairs, and we slept in a park close by for two nights.
The 1906 disaster marked the birth of earthquake science in America. Even as the fires raged for 3 days, California's governor rounded up 20 of the state's leading scientists. They were challenged to investigate how and why the Earth's crust had ruptured with such terrifying violence. Ross Stein, a geophysicist with the United States Geological Survey, says that 4 years later, they produced the Lawson Report, which laid the foundation for much of what is known today about earthquakes.
Before the 1906 earthquake, most scientists thought that an earthquake involved shaking of the ground, but not any permanent displacements of the ground. What the Lawson Report did was to show us that sudden movement along a fault, a zone of weakness in the earth, produces the earthquake shaking. In addition to producing the shaking, which is what we all feel, it produces permanent displacement of the land.
Author Susanna Hoffman, who has written on the anthropology of disasters, says that people are in a state of denial when they choose to live in a place like California, where earthquakes are always a potential danger.
We recognize that enough to perceive that there is a risk, and then the judgment is made, and this is the gamble, do I want to deal with that risk? Is that a serious risk or not? And most Californians who've decided to live here decided it's a calculable risk, it's an okay risk. People think, well, it's not going to do that much damage, they don't kill that many people, and actually that is quite true. What kills people is what happens afterwards.
Elka Demunik lives directly on top of the Hayward Fault, the most dangerous of the 7 earthquake faults that crisscross the San Francisco Bay Area, because it is due to snap at any time. Although her house shakes every couple of weeks, she says she doesn't give it a thought or think about the danger on a daily basis.
Not that I have a false sense of security, but I'd rather live somewhere where the possibility of having an earthquake is, you know, maybe slim to none in my lifetime, but I could be living somewhere like where they're having floods and tornadoes and hurricanes, which is a given every year. And I don't know if I could deal with that.
The San Francisco earthquake and fire of 1906 is being marked by dozens of commemorative events. On April 18th, the city will mark the anniversary with the traditional wreath laying at historic Lotus Fountain, a landmark that survived the disaster. At 5:12 a.m., there will be a moment of silence, followed by a citywide bell ringing and the traditional singing of the city's anthem, San Francisco. I'm Jan Sluzer in San Francisco.
San Francisco.
California earthquake of April 18th, 1906 ranks as one of the most significant earthquakes of all time. Today, its importance comes more as a wealth of scientific knowledge derived from it than its sheer size. Rupturing the northernmost 296 miles of the San Andreas Fault from northwest of San Juan Bautista to Triple Junction at Cape Mendocino, the earthquake confounded contemporary geologists with its large horizontal displacements and its great rupture length. Indeed, the significance of the fault and recognition of its large cumulative offset would not be fully appreciated until the advent of the plate tectonics. More than a half a century later, analysis of the 1906 displacements and strain in the shrouding crust led Reed, 1910, to formulate his elastic rebound theory of the earthquake source, which remains today as a principal model of the earthquake cycle. At almost 5:12 a.m. local time, April 18th, 1906, a foreshock occurred with a sufficient force to be felt widely throughout the San Francisco Bay Area. The great earthquake broke loose some 20 to 25 seconds later with an epicenter near San Francisco. Violent shocks punctuated the strong shaking, which lasted some 45 to 60 seconds. The earthquake was felt from southern Oregon to south of Los Angeles and inland as far as central Nevada. Basic reference about the earthquake and the damage it caused, geological observations of the fault rupture and shaking effects and other consequences of the earthquake. The Lawson's 1908 report remains the authoritative work as well as arguably the most important study of a single earthquake. In the public's mind, the earthquake is perhaps remembered most for the fire it spawned on San Francisco.
The relentless fires that destroyed San Francisco reached 2,000 degrees, melting glass, turning water from hoses into steam, and forcing firefighters to use vinegar and wine to douse the flames when hoses ran dry.
The fire was not handled correctly. There was an indiscriminate use of dynamite.
Former California State Librarian and USC History Professor Kevin Starr.
Too much dynamite was being used, and far from stopping the fire, that actually facilitated it.
Fire Chief Dennis Sullivan suffered fatal injuries when he was crushed inside his apartment at the fire station on Bush and Kearney. With no chief, no phone system, and thousands of broken water pipes, the department was virtually helpless.
The able-bodied men, instead of being evacuated from the city, should have been kept. And those areas where the residents were allowed to stay and fight fires, like Russian Hill, you go to Russian Hill today, you see all those beautiful pre-earthquake homes, is because they cut a deal with the local militia or snuck back and fought the fire. The employees at the Pacific Union Club atop Knob Hill, although it was severely damaged, it wasn't lost totally. They put wet burlap sacks on the roof and fought it that way.
Clock stopped at 5:13 a.m. here at the Agnew's Insane Asylum, many miles south of the 1906 epicenter.
One of the clients was quoted as saying, "I'm going to heaven in a chariot of fire. Don't you hear the rumble of the chariot wheels?"
Ruth Ritchie works at what is now the Agnew's Developmental Center. Historian Philip Fradkin says the quake crumbled the hospital's unreinforced towers.
The mortar was of poor quality. The brick just skewered apart, collapsed, and the shrieks of the people were incredibly loud. It was what in those days was called an insane asylum.
Surviving patients wandered about in a daze.
They were actually penned up or chained to trees for a short period of time until they could decide what to do with them. And most of them worshipped to a similar hospital in Stockton.
Today, Sun Microsystems occupies that part of the Agnew's campus. The hospital has been rebuilt on safer ground.
We did have ultimately 117 deaths altogether.
Union Square, to some, the heart of San Francisco, pulsating with life, vitality, and energy. So it's not surprising that in April of 06, when the city was shaken into shambles, San Franciscans flocked to this spot for refuge.
Somebody had dragged a piano, and they stood around singing. Others slept on the grass. They thought they were safe there.
Historian Gladys Hansen says Union Square turned out to be anything but a safe haven. Fires closed in on the square, forcing another exodus. But one enterprising businessman left his wares behind.
Mr. Heal from Heal's College, he brought 24 typewriters and dug a hole in Union Square and buried them, thinking that if the fire is coming through, they're not going to get my new typewriters.
In 1906, Union Square was a commercial center, a place ladies went to lunch and shop. Buildings burned to the ground, but from the ashes grew the retail center that stands proudly today as one of the greatest urban shopping areas in the nation.
Years ago, on the night of April 17, 1906, the great tenor Enrico Caruso made his first and only appearance in San Francisco. The event was a brilliant jewel in the city's crown, the Queen of the West hosting the world's greatest singer in the world's most popular opera, Bizet's Carmen. But the next day, no one was speaking of Caruso. Most people were not speaking at all. They were wandering in stunned silence, or desperately searching, or clawing out of rubble. That morning, just before sunrise, the earth shrugged, and San Francisco collapsed and burned. Natural forces sparked the disaster. Human actions magnified it. Politics and economics redefined it and shaped its aftermath. It was, in other words, very much like other disasters, past and present.
I had heard in the morning of the earthquake that the Valencia Hotel on Valencia Street had collapsed. So I got up there as quick as I could, and several blocks, and I helped pull the dead and the crippled people out.
I remember my dad taking me across the street that evening, and we watched the town burn. We were up on Buchanan Street between Herman and Waller, and we could see these flash fires breaking out all over the city, you know. And even, for a little fellow 3 years old, it was just a gorgeous sight. I didn't realize what was taking place down there. It was spectacular to me, you know, but I remember it. It was a vivid picture.
San Francisco burned for 3 days after the earthquake. The destruction is preserved in photographs. Cameras were becoming commonplace by that time, and the calamity was recorded more thoroughly than any in previous history. The photographs reveal a landscape of devastation, a foreshadowing of Dresden and Hiroshima. Dennis Smith, a former New York City firefighter, is the author of San Francisco is Burning.
28,000 buildings burned in the fires that were caused by the earthquakes. Why did the earthquakes cause the fire? Well, because flues were connected to the roofs, and the earthquakes displaced many of the flues, and the heat from the fires, instead of going out, went to the roofs of the buildings and created fires. That's one reason. Another reason is all those morning fires that were created to heat things. Like in a Chinese laundry, those fires created to heat the iron so that the laundry people could work, ironing sheets and pillowcases and so on, or to put a breakfast on or whatever. Those fires became displaced.
The city now resembled a vast holocaust. I ascended a hill at one side from which I had a view over the scene. This was the foreign quarter, and the hill was an encampment mostly of Spaniards and Italians, all over the slopes, suggestive of a battlefield. Again, it was a lovely day, the sun shining on the hills and the bay in all directions, whilst below, and as far as the eye could reach over the city, nothing but fire, and the same pall of black smoke. The same continuous roar, carried by the dynamite explosives of the military trying to stem the progress of the flames. Line after line of houses bursting into flames and then falling with a crash, whilst the flames leaping over the ruins seized on fresh victims. Then again, fresh fires appeared in outside places, and in each case nothing to stop them, for there was no water and the military could not be everywhere, and were concentrating their efforts in the most important parts of the city. But as it subsequently proved, all to no purpose. William Hancock, in a letter to his wife, Mary, May 31st, 1906.